And the next case is Carmina R. Camporelli versus the Republic of Venezuela and Petrochemical Sales. Rodrigo S. Da Silva is here for the appellate, Camporelli. Sally Pei is here for the Republic of Cuba, Venezuela. And Claire DeLell is here for Petrochemical Sales. And Mr. Da Silva, you may begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Rodrigo Da Silva, and for the past decade, it has been the greatest privilege of my legal career to represent the appellant, Carmina Rita Camporelli, who is the plaintiff below, who is sitting here in the courtroom. We ask this Court to reverse the grant of the motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and for failure to state a cause of action, because the plaintiff has plausibly pled and provided circumstantial and direct evidence that cumulatively establishes that the criminal case used as a pretext to expropriate my client's company was a sham or a pretext to expropriate Maribel Casier.
So you have to show that there's no public purpose for the seizure of her property, right?
Correct.
And so in order to do that, we need to look in the record to see whether there is any evidence that this was a sham criminal proceeding. So where do we go in the record for evidence that it was a sham, that the seizure of her property was a sham criminal proceeding?
Okay. There are a few pieces of evidence. The most significant, I think, is the decision of a Costa Rican court that reversed a trial court's decision to extradite the appellant's son. He was a director of the company. It's a family business, mother and three sons. They all got involved in the same case. The same two charges, drug trafficking and criminal conspiracy. And what the appellate court in Costa Rica found is what we learned, everybody learns in the first semester of law school, that many crimes require a mens rea. You have to have a specific intent. The crime of excessive storage of hydrochloric acid, that's not a crime. The crime that she was charged and that her kids were investigated for, the specific law says the possession of a controlled substance with the specific intent to either distribute or manufacture illegal narcotics or other psychotropic substances. The second charge is criminal conspiracy. So what the Costa Rican court did, looking at all the criminal record as part of the extradition request, what they found is that the only fact is that they had excess hydrochloric acid. The Costa Rican court said that's not enough, either under Venezuelan law or under Costa Rican law, because there is no evidence in the file that the so-called excess was used for an illicit purpose. I have this bottle here that has acetone. I bought that legally. Even if I have a full warehouse of those bottles, I'm not a drug trafficker. I'm only a drug trafficker if I use that substance, which is a precursor, just like hydrochloric acid, to either manufacture or distribute narcotics. And the Costa Rican court found that because there was no underlying criminal drug trafficking crime, the criminal conspiracy case must also fail.
Did the court find that there was no underlying crime or that Venezuela had not provided enough evidence to satisfy extradition requirements for that crime?
They found that there was no evidence for the crime itself to meet the elements of the crime, that the specific intent to either manufacture or distribute illegal narcotics was not there. And that because criminal conspiracy requires an underlying crime, that charge also fails.
And they found that under Venezuelan law, correct?
I'm sorry?
They found that under Venezuelan law.
Under Venezuelan law, and also they also apply Costa Rican law because of the dual criminality requirement. There is another great piece of evidence because it's direct or circumstantial evidence. The appellant obtained lawful permanent resident status in the United States. I'm an immigration attorney. I represent clients in immigration proceedings all the time. There is a federal statute under the Immigration Nationality Act that if an individual is suspected, near suspicion, not arrested, not charged, not convicted, near suspicion that an individual is involved in a drug conspiracy or his wife or his kids or any close to them, they cannot get any immigration benefits. It's a total ban. They are inadmissible. And the appellant testified in her deposition, she's a lawful permanent resident. Her son, who is sitting there, is a U.S. citizen. He was first an asylee, then he applied for lawful permanent resident, then he became a citizen, and then he petitioned for the appellant lawful permanent resident status. Throughout that process, the FBI and all the Homeland Security took a look at these charges and they passed judgment because otherwise they would not be here. We also have the statements of President Chavez, which we attach a transcript to the record. He went on national television and in the same sentence, he stated, great, we took these four companies because they took seven companies. Suddenly, all the companies that provided services to Pekiven, which is the state-owned petrochemical company, seven companies, including the appellants, suddenly all of the owners are drug traffickers and suddenly all of those companies are taken and suddenly all of those companies become property of Pekiven. And in that televised address, President Chavez said, the fight against drug trafficking and the strengthening of the socialist economy. In the same sentence, the Second Circuit in the Bayer-Walters decision stated that sometimes it's very hard to prove that a criminal case is a sham, but there might be statements from foreign officials that show the ulterior motive. A judge did not transfer the companies to Pekiven, the criminal judge. It was the president himself. We also need to take a look at that some of the government officials that are involved here. Tariq El-Aissami, he was the Minister of Justice that sought President Chavez's approval to transfer the companies to Pekiven. Mr. Al-Sami is on the ICE most wanted list for allegedly conspiring to bring over 1,000 kilograms of cocaine to the United States. He's indicted in the Southern District of New York on 8 felonies, including conspiracy for money laundering and violations of the Kingpin Act. He has been designated as under the Kingpin Act as a narcotics international trafficker. Mr. Reverol, he was the head of the National Anti-Drug Office, the equivalent of the DEA. He held that position when my client's company was seized in a pre-conviction forfeiture.
I want to make sure I understand. The record reflects that criminal charges were filed against the owners of all of these companies, the seven companies?
Correct. None of them have been tried today, 14 years later, because the appellees will make the case that she cannot be tried because she's in absentia. 14 years later, there has not been a criminal conviction in any of those cases. 14 years later, the company doesn't exist as a going concern. They had to keep the company under the receivership order, under the pre-conviction order, in the same status quo. Because if the person ultimately is found innocent, the property needs to be returned. Now, that company, we have evidence in the record, is now being used by another ministry to stockpile food that they give to poor people. So they haven't even complied with their own directives. There is also evidence in the record, there is a PowerPoint from of officials from Pekiven that states that this is a great company, we can sell the company. How can you sell the company that you have temporary receivership and if the person is ultimately found innocent, you need to return? That's very strong evidence of the expropriatory intent. Moreover, even the excess storage, they allege 1.3 million of hydrochloric acid. There was an audit conducted after they took possession of the company. And in that audit, it was reflected that it was only 410 kilograms, which was within margin tolerance when you buy products in bulk. And again, the excess storage is only a red herring. That's not a crime. The crime is the possession of a controlled substance to manufacture or distribute narcotics. It is undisputed here that she had all the government permits to have this chemical. It is undisputed that she bought the chemicals from Pekiven, who has a monopoly on hydrochloric acid. And it's also undisputed that when she bought the product from Pekiven, it was only to distribute it to other state actors that were pre-approved by Pekiven. Every time she had to submit a purchase order, she had to tell, I'm sending this to these other state-owned actors. There is even a letter from Pekiven in the file that states that Maribelka was a great partner of Pekiven and they always complied with the needs to distribute the product to other state actors.
And counsel, this is all in the record?
It is all in the record, Your Honor.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. If Justice Aponte was permitted to testify or whatever, what would he have said? Do we know from the record what he would have said?
He's the smoking gun witness in this case. Mm-hmm. He was chief of the criminal chamber of the Venezuelan Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. He has given multiple interviews and filed affidavits in multiple cases because he sent many people to jail and he has regretted that. We had quoted articles from him where he has basically stated that justice in Venezuela was like a bowl of pudding. He got massaged at the wheels of the executive and that he personally, every Friday, received calls from then President Chavez telling him how to decide cases. He was 3 hours away from here. We subpoenaed him to take his deposition and the judge blocked it under the common law sovereign official immunity. That has nothing to do. We were not bringing Mr. Aponte here as a defendant, bringing claims against him. It defies common sense that under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, government officials, by definition, they have an expiration date, unless you're a dictator. Many times, with the passage of time, former officials are going to have personal knowledge of the facts. And it would defy lots of common sense that you can strip a foreign sovereign of immunity and then you cannot get your witnesses to prosecute that case.
Well, I had a question I was going to ask the other side, but maybe you know. I understand that at some point, counsel was substituted, counsel for the Venezuelans were substituted for Guaido. Is now, who is representing them? Are they representing Maduro now or are they representing still Guaido?
My understanding is that the interim presidency of Guaido was dissolved and that the only democratically elected sector of the government, which is the Congress, has appointed a committee to deal with assets abroad and that they represent members of that committee. But it would be part of the Guaido so-called government, but a different group of people that are associated with Congress legislators. And the jurisdictional discovery, we didn't get almost no jurisdictional discovery. They produced a 36 witness that had no personal knowledge. They couldn't even give us a copy of the criminal file. And, Your Honors, the client is the Republic, is Peggy Ben. The client is not the representatives of the Republic. The Republic is only one. Peggy Ben is only one. They came into this case voluntarily to remove the lawyers for the Maduro regime who had access to the documents. There is no evidence, even in the record, that they called the Maduro officials to request the documents. They can have talks about transition of power, about holding democratic elections, but they couldn't have. There is no evidence that they even say, "Can you please give us the documents? We are defending the Republic abroad. We need these documents. Can you please provide it to them?" And on that record, we really got really rough justice here. We couldn't depose our smoking gun witness. The court completely disregarded the Costa Rican decision, which is very, very strong and very well reasoned. She did not make any mention of the immigration law issue that clearly provides circumstantial evidence that the U.S. government, the executive branch, have passed judgment on these proceedings. She did not address at all the uncontroverted expert opinion report that not only talk about the status of the judiciary in Venezuela, but also about the irregularities with this case itself, the warrantless searches, and the fact that this should have been an administrative violation at most.
Before you finish, I have one follow-up question regarding Justice Aponte. Didn't the United States here submit a statement of interest that, or I guess in a different case, that a foreign official is immune from testifying to the extent that plaintiffs sought information relating to acts taken in his official capacity as a government official?
Not in this case.
Not in this case, but if that's been the United States' position as a general matter, why wouldn't that apply? Why wouldn't that principle apply here?
That was not an FSAA case.
Okay.
That was not an FSAA case.
So Justice DePonte is not a party to the case, all right?
Yes.
So.
Exactly. That's another reason.
Mm-hmm.
I know my time is up unless the court has any other questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. De Silva. Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Sally Pei from Arnold and Porter on behalf of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, as recognized by the United States, formerly led by Interim President Juan Guaido and now by the President of the National Assembly.
So you're representing now the Maduro regime?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. We're representing the legitimate representatives of Venezuela, which are the 2015 National Assembly, okay, as led by the president of that body. So we are not here representing the Maduro regime.
Okay.
In fact, when our firm was retained by the recognized government of Venezuela in this case, we had no preconceived notions about the facts or whether these plaintiffs had legitimate claims for relief. And part of our task was to discern what the position of the recognized government should be. Because the Republic condemns the abuses perpetrated by the Maduro and Chavez regimes, and in cases where plaintiffs have actually demonstrated that they have valid claims to compensation arising from, for example, expropriations carried out by under former President Chavez, the Republic has consented to entry of judgment. But as the factual record in this case demonstrates, this is not one of those cases. The district court correctly dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, and this court should affirm for three main reasons. First, the court correctly followed the Supreme Court's guidance in Helmerich and this court's mandate, and required the plaintiff to show that there was a taking of property in violation of international law. Second, the plaintiff failed to show that the criminal proceeding pursuant to which Marivalca was temporarily seized was a sham. And third, none of the district court's discovery rulings, including its decision to quash the subpoena issued to Justice Aponte on grounds of foreign official immunity, was an abuse of discretion. So turning first to the framework, as this court recognized in its 2018 decision, the Supreme Court made clear in Helmerich that in order to establish jurisdiction under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, the plaintiff had to show that her claim arose from the taking of property in violation of international law. And I think it's common ground here that really what the issue boils down to in this case is whether the plaintiff has put forward evidence that the legal proceeding pursuant to which the Marivalca was temporarily seized was a sham. And the record simply doesn't support the plaintiff's theory.
Well, how does it not support the theory that plaintiff is espousing when you have the Costa Rican judgment finding that there was no evidence of a crime or a criminal conspiracy?
So I'd like to address the Costa Rican court decision. Those, as Judge Grant noted, were about the extradition request. And so the courts in Costa Rica were applying the standards to consider whether extradition was appropriate. They were not determining whether there was evidence to convict Freddie Comparelli, who's not the plaintiff in this case, of any crime. The question was simply whether the documents that had been presented by the Venezuelan authorities showed that the conduct of which Freddie was accused was a crime under both Costa Rican and Venezuelan law. And so if you look at, for example, page...
Right, but if they found that they believed that it did meet the elements, then he would have been extradited, correct? He was not extradited.
He was not extradited because the Costa Rican courts could not determine from the face of the documents presented by Venezuela that Freddie had what conduct Freddie had been accused of, and whether that conduct actually constituted a crime under Costa Rican or Venezuelan law. They were specifically not making a judgment whether.
So that sort of begs the question: if you have Justice Aponte testify under oath, and he would testify, I'm assuming the factual proffer would be that in fact that was a sham proceeding, a sham criminal proceeding that was done for the purposes of expropriating unlawfully the company of the individuals in question. Doesn't that beg the question of why Justice Aponte shouldn't have been deposed?
So with respect to Justice Aponte, there's no evidence in the record about what he would have testified in this particular case. The plaintiff never submitted a proffer of what testimony he would have given. There are, for example, attachments to their complaint where he has made statements about other cases in which he was involved, but there's nothing indicating what he would have said with respect to these particular plaintiffs. And I think that's a really important point to underscore.
Well, we do know that after the company was expropriated, that I think that then at the time it was not Maduro, it was Chavez, commented towards socialism, correct?
So first of all, the company has not been expropriated. It is under a temporary supervision.
Well, it's not owned by the original owners, correct? In my definition, that's expropriated, but it's not a question. You may move on.
It has not been expropriated. It's under temporary seizure, President Chavez has written a statement towards socialism, but I don't think that demonstrates that the underlying criminal proceeding pursuant to which the property was temporarily seized for law enforcement purposes was a sham.
And isn't there evidence that the hydrochlorine that was actually purchased from the government itself?
Yes, but the plaintiff has conceded both in the Venezuelan criminal proceedings and in this case that Maravalco was storing hydrochloric acid in excess of the amounts it was permitted to handle. And the district court's finding that the storage of excess hydrochloric acid is a legitimate reason for law enforcement seizure of Maravalco is not clearly erroneous. I think particularly given that the claimant herself has, as I said, admitted that there was an excess. She has never explained, offered a satisfactory explanation as to why the 1.3 million kilogram finding in the by the Venezuelan authorities was wrong. The audit report to which the plaintiff refers is a report produced by the plaintiff and her counsel themselves, submitted several months or perhaps a year after the original investigation, not accompanied by any corroborating documentation. So the district court, again, was not, did not clearly err in finding that the storage of...
Let me go back to Justice DuPonte, because I heard Mr. DeSilva say earlier that Justice DuPonte is the smoking gun. And his testimony could establish that the seizure was a sham criminal proceeding, but his deposition was quashed. And so I heard you say that there was no proffer about what Justice DuPonte would say, but that's not why the district court quashed the subpoena. The district court quashed the subpoena for based on procedural grounds, just based on his, there's only jurisdiction over individuals or foreign sovereigns pursuant to Samantar versus Youssef. But DuPonte is not a party to the case. He's just a witness, so Samantar would not apply. So it seems to me that the court applied the wrong law in quashing the subpoena, Justice DuPonte. And if the court applied the wrong law, then that would constitute an abuse of discretion.
So I disagree, Your Honor, that the court applied the wrong law. The law that the court was applying to quash the subpoena of Justice DuPonte was the common law of foreign official immunity. There's no dispute that Justice DuPonte is a former official of Venezuela. And the federal courts have made clear that the immunity that attaches to former officials that prevents them from testifying about acts committed or information gained during their performance of official duties, that is really an immunity that flows from the sovereign, and the sovereign has standing to raise that immunity. So if you can look at, for example, the Giraldo versus Drummond case and Wolf versus Bank of China, in which the court prevented or either denied a motion to compel testimony, or in the Wolf's case, quashed a subpoena for testimony of a former official who was not a party to the case. And there's no basis for this notion that the plaintiff seems to be advancing that the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, for some reason, provides an exception to these well-established principles of common law immunity.
Why isn't there a pretty strong inference to be made that these proceedings were a sham based on the fact that somehow all seven of the companies were allegedly involved in this drug trafficking or drug production activity at the same time that the government wished to take over these companies?
So again, I think that the standard that the court was applying and rightly, mm-hmm. May I finish my answer to the question? The standard that the court was applying was whether there was clear and specific evidence of impropriety in the particular case here. And so I think that the notion that there were other companies under investigation at the same time doesn't bear on whether this particular prosecution was a sham. As I noted, there's evidence about the amount of hydrochloric acid that the plaintiff conceded that the amounts were in excess. There's been no evidence presented in this case from the criminal proceedings themselves. The plaintiff didn't present any testimony from her own criminal lawyers about any impropriety in this particular case. And she admitted at her deposition that she was not aware and her lawyers had never represented to her that there was any kind of corruption, bribery, misconduct by the lawyers, by the judges in her case.
But there's not been a conviction, right?
That's correct. There's not been a conviction. And in Ms. Comparelli's case, that's because I think as the plaintiff noted in his argument, she has left Venezuela and proceedings cannot continue in absentia. So it's been suspended because she is no longer in the country. It's quite possible that we hope as well that conditions in Venezuela will change, and at some point in the future she will be able to return and the criminal proceedings can resume and she can defend herself in that criminal process. And if she prevails, then she is entitled to claim the return of her property and any damages.
Does the company still exist?
As far as I am aware, as far as the record reflects, yes, it exists. It is being managed by another ministry, consistent with Venezuelan law.
Thank you. Was Camporelli able to depose any other Venezuelan officials under Rule 30B6?
Yes, we presented a 30B6 witness for deposition, and the plaintiff took her deposition.
Okay. Actually, I just realized I have a follow-up question. What of the comment from your friend on the other side that no one has asked the Maduro regime to produce these documents and answer these questions?
So I think as you will see from the declaration that Mr. Aguilar presented in the district court, that's at docket entry 231-1, I think, he explains there the reasons why jurisdictional discovery was extremely difficult in this case and the risk of personal harm that would have come to personnel from his office if they were to identify themselves as being associated with the Guaido administration seeking documents from the Maduro regime. So it's quite clearly set forth there, and the magistrate judge in the district court found that compelling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lell, on behalf of International Petrochemical Sales.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Claire Dalal for the Appellee Petrochemica de Venezuela, also known as PECAVEN. The district court correctly held that plaintiff's evidence failed to satisfy the narrow circumstances recognized in cases such as Bayer Walters for the establishing jurisdiction based on temporary law enforcement seizures. As the district court correctly found, plaintiff failed to elicit clear or specific evidence that the criminal investigation and preventative seizure lacked a public purpose. It was plaintiff's burden under Helmrich to establish a taking in violation of international law, and she failed to do so. Plaintiff's evidence as to PECAVEN in particular highlights only evidence that serves the legitimate purpose of regulating controlled chemicals in Venezuela, and the record shows that PECAVEN's involvement began in November 2010. That's 2 years after the criminal investigation began and followed by well-documented judicial process from the Zuliat courts, which affected the preventative seizure of Maravelka's property.
Let me ask you, what exactly would a plaintiff like Camporelli have to show in your opinion to meet her burden?
She would have to show that this was a sham proceeding. There was
What would she have to show? I'm asking you because that means nothing to me.
She, according to the guidance from the Second Circuit, I think the Second Circuit in Bayer Walters has expounded in most detailed fashion than other cases that there were ulterior motives that strongly suggested and in fact did show that there was a scheme or a desire to expropriate the property or nationalized property. There is no such evidence in this case. There has only been speculation. And in fact, if we look at
the amended complaint, Justice Aponte testify under oath that in fact this was the modus operandi of the Venezuelan government to create sham criminal proceedings against all business interests, whether it was the Best Buy of Venezuela or companies such as Ms. Camporelli's company, to expropriate their companies. In order to do so, they created criminal sham proceedings against them. If he testified to that, would that not be sufficient?
Justice Aponte would have to testify as to clear and specific evidence that the particular proceedings concerning Maravelka were in fact a sham. There is no evidence in the record. There's no proffer, as Ms. Pei has already informed the court, as to what Justice Aponte would have testified to. Now, Justice Aponte did feel the need to...
Was he on the court that considered some of these issues?
in Venezuela? Justice Aponte himself?
That is correct.
Well, it seems like he's uniquely qualified to offer some sort of information about whether or not the proceedings were sham criminal proceedings. He was on the cases himself, right?
So Justice Aponte felt the need to unburden his conscience, as he put it, in respect of different cases. There is nothing in the record. There is no evidence that he has any view whatsoever about this particular case.
There's no evidence in the record because the subpoena was quashed, correct?
That is correct.
Right. It's difficult to have evidence when the subpoena is quashed.
There was nothing preventing plaintiff from coming forward with a declaration, a proffer, anything of that nature, but they did not do that. But I would also venture to suggest that the scope of jurisdictional discovery did not reach and should not have reached those issues. There was insufficient factual allegations, even in the amended complaint. If we look at the amended complaint, the allegations are generalized statements about the Chavez regime and then purported defenses from a domestic law.
I mean, I don't even know that we get to that, because here the district court found that there was no subject matter jurisdiction. Right? That's the first issue.
That's correct. Based on plaintiff's own evidence attached to their amended complaint, it showed nothing but
the district court found no subject matter jurisdiction based on the fact that there was no violation of international law, but there's no violation of international law because there was no discovery that was permitted in order to meet, to be able to satisfy that evidentiary purpose, because this is a strange case because it's not like a 12B6 where you only rely on the complaint. Under this procedural posture, there has to be, the district court can consider evidence, but when you don't allow evidence to proceed, it's very difficult to have a plaintiff be able to meet their burden then.
So the evidence, the jurisdictional discovery that was that did take place was actually a lot more extensive than perhaps is evident at first blush. Pekoven, for example, produced over almost 1,500 pages worth of documents. And to recall from the record,
but you're not going to have evidence of a violation of international law.
If there were any evidence that these were sham proceedings, that would have been produced, and there was none. If I may respond to a couple of points that Mr. De Silva made regarding some of that evidence, he contended that a May 2010 letter that Pekoven's sales manager sent stated that Maravilca always complied with its permits, but that's not what the letter says at all. The letter is a very short letter at 85-11, and it states only that Pekoven asked Maravilca about the possibility of Maravilca meeting its contingency plans in accordance with the CICPC permit. It said nothing about what the contingency plans for HCL were. None of the quantities were mentioned, or even whether that contingency plan that was anticipated would meet the existing CICPC permit that Maravilca had, or whether indeed Maravilca would need any new permit.
All right. Thank you. We have your argument. Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Mr. De Silva, you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Your Honor, the most important topic to decide this case is that there is a burden shifting that occurs in an FSIA case. The plaintiff first needs to put an initial burden of production that the exception applies. We think we met that with direct and circumstantial evidence that this criminal proceeding is a sham. Having met that burden, the ultimate burden of persuasion pursuant to even this court's jurisprudence in Bedenguechea versus Venezuela, the ultimate burden of persuasion rests with them to establish that the exception does not apply. Judge Williams put the burden on us all the way from beginning to end. And she even not even consider many of the key pieces of evidence. So having the appellant put the initial burden, it shifts to them the ultimate burden of persuasion. And if they cannot prove that the criminal proceeding is legitimate, we should prevail. And there is nothing here else to decide other than damages, because this is a unique case. What we need to prove to establish subject matter jurisdiction is an unlawful expropriation. What we need to prove to win on the merits is an unlawful expropriation, as this court recognized in the 2016 decision. I wanted to also comment in another piece of evidence. Venezuela requested red notices to arrest the appellant's children worldwide. Julio, who is sitting here and used to be a plaintiff in this case, challenged that red notice and produced some of the evidence that is at issue in this case. And what Interpol did is it reached out to Interpol Venezuela and said, give me evidence that proves that this arrest warrant for these charges is legitimate. And Venezuela Interpol did not respond. That's another inference. If they had goods, they would have provided them to Interpol. They would have provided them to the Costa Rican authorities. They didn't. And as a result, the red notices were lifted.
Is that in the record?
It is in the record, yes. It's part of the response to the motion to dismiss. The two comparables in Costa Rica got political asylum. They got refugee status. Julio got asylum here. The only reason why the appellant didn't get asylum is because she's Italian, she's not Venezuelan, she would have never qualified for asylum. Otherwise, she would have filed and probably get it. So that's all of evidence. We have two foreign sovereigns, Interpol, and a really independent tribunal in Costa Rica. Costa Rica is a highly respected democratic nation, perhaps the most developed in Central America, that to look at these cases and the facts carefully and found a decision. We didn't, the 36 Venezuela produced had no information about anything. It was a lawyer from the Guaido administration residing in Colombia. She testified she was a prosecutor for corruption, and she had to leave the country because she was investigating President Maduro for corruption. Judge Williams didn't allow to depose a 36 of Pecky then, or IPSL, which we allege is the alter ego. We requested documents for the criminal file and other things. We didn't get anything at all. And I think this court, however, if it reverses under any ground, the court must address those issues, because if the case goes back, we're going to have those issues again. We're going to ask for anything to our case, and we're not going to get it. And lastly, we need to really use the court's authority to remind this to a different district judge. We've been going at it for 10 years. We asked the first time. We didn't get it. My client, Raleigh, doesn't think he's going to get him impartial. There is no jury trial in this case. I kindly ask that we get a reassignment to a different district judge under your authority. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. De Silva. Thank you, counsel. The court will be in recess for 15 minutes.
All rise.